Item nine, consider and take possible action to amend the Code of Fiduciary Conduct and Ethics. This is an action item. Christina or Karen? Who am I?
Karen.
Karen, sorry.
Thank you again. this item is to have the board consider some amendments to the Code of Fiduciary Conduct and Ethics. We haven't actually reviewed it for the purpose of making edits for a very long time. So some of the proposed edits are just simply updates to position names and that kind of thing. We did provide you with a red line copy of the code that reflects all of the suggested changes. The substantive ones, I summarized those for you in a memo. Basically, if you go to section 9, that is a substantive change there regarding communications between board members and service providers and other non-CICERA persons and entities. We're recommending updating those provisions to allow communications between the board's elected officers and non-CICERA persons in the ordinary course of conducting business, and to allow the CEO to either distribute written communications from board members to current service providers or post the written communications in the CICERA Dropbox file for review. So I think the purpose of that provision was to make sure that the full board, every trustee, is able to see these communications. So if one board member is having these communications, then the CEO provides a copy to all of the trustees. And this would add the ability to, instead of distributing the written communications, posting a copy of the communications on Dropbox so that the trustees can access it. We're suggesting creating an exemptions by which draft presentation materials received by the board's elected officers or board committee members in connection with reviewing proposed agenda item materials for presentation to the board would not need to be distributed by the CEO to all members of the board. This is just to streamline the process of if the board chair, for example, is receiving a draft presentation material for the purpose of the agenda, that doesn't need to be shared with the rest of the board. Of course, you can always request it if you wish. That's not an issue, but it would streamline the process to not have a requirement of distribution. Before I move on to the next item, are there any questions about this one, Section 9?
I don't have any questions about it, but I participated in the drafting of this just by way of full disclosure. This came up recently. It was actually, I think, the last board meeting where we had a significant presentation from Verus, and I had reviewed a very early rough draft of a Verus PowerPoint that Scott Whelan had provided me with the intention to get some input from me as board chair about, you know, size, content, how big, how long, all that kind of stuff. And so Scott, Tim Price, and myself had it was about a half-hour Teams call to look at this material, which I got the morning of just before the call. I took a look at it, gave a lot of, you know, real-time feedback and input to Scott and Tim, and suggested that maybe they reorient the PowerPoint slides in a different way in terms of presentation. I think ultimately that resulted in moving a number of the PowerPoint slides from the presentation mainstream to the appendix for further review if people wanted to. Anyway, that whole interaction gave rise to the fact that it was a large amount of material, as you know, on the asset liability study that came before us anyway. And so the idea was if we were then going to have board members read all of that material and then get sent a completely different file of a lot of the same, actually all the same material, it was a lot of material. And so my reaction, and I discussed it with our CEO, was that that's a lot to ask of people. shortly before a meeting. So we opted, and I think it was the right call, to put it in Dropbox to let everybody know. I made that announcement at the board meeting. If you really want to dive in and look at what the raw PowerPoint looks at or looks like, have at it, right? So anyway, the genesis of this is that circumstance where if we're trying to manage board business, we might have some direct interaction with a consultant. In this case, it was Verus. And so those are drafts, and you know we'll have them available in Dropbox. But it's at least under this change, they wouldn't be required to be sent out to everybody. So anyway, that's the purpose of the change. I just wanted to be very open about that. So anyway, I interrupted your flow. So go ahead.
No, thank you very much. Thanks for elaborating on this and proposing the language. I think it's a very good way to streamline the process. So moving on to Section 11 regarding non-compliance sanctions. So this is an interesting one. It basically tells us, well, what's going to happen if a board member violates the code? And I had discussions about this with the board's fiduciary counsel, Ashley Dunning. Luckily at Sisera, we haven't had this come up, which is great. But she, in her role advising other boards, had some edits that she suggested that the board can discuss and consider whether you're interested in making. Basically, the censorship currently, the provision says that if there's a violation, the board chair and the board as a whole would take action to censor the board member, right, for their violation. So Ms. Dunning proposed also adding a private censorship, which is where the board chair would privately censor the board member, so that does not require board action. And also, in the event it's the board chair who is the violator, the next board officer in line would have that authority. And of course we have a note in the code, and I just want to remind you that in addition to censure, the board also has the ability to pursue all of its legal remedies against any board members who violates the provision of the code, in addition to the censorship.
This is always the happy part of the discussion right here. Yeah, we have a little something we need to go over.
I actually have a question. Who decides if statute was violated, like for private, I guess, censors? Like, does just Scott decides, okay, Dennis violated something and talks to me, or is it still board and then decides it, and then Scott is in power to censor?
So. That's a good question. So the way it's written now, it would be the board who makes that decision, but this proposes a private censorship by the chairperson. I would think that we would have a fiduciary counsel involved in the analysis of the situation and whether the violation occurred.
Mm-hmm. So based on that, I hadn't really thought about this a lot. It's wishful thinking. I'm hoping this one doesn't come to pass. But if you had a situation where a board was making a determination, would that be a closed session discussion under one or more personnel exceptions? Under the Brown Act. So in other words, if the board were going to take that action, kind of defeats the purpose of a private approval if you're having a very public discussion about a matter.
It would most likely be a public discussion unless it fits within an exception in the Brown Act, such as potential litigation, or it's not, so board members are not employees, so it wouldn't come under that exception.
Hmm. Well, I mean, I like the approach that has been fashioned here. Yeah, I don't have any problem with that. But it might be something that I would suggest maybe talking to Ashley about as to whether there's a means to address that. The good news is, to my knowledge, this hasn't come up in the whole time I've been around, 10 years or so. And I'm hoping this is an outlier, very, very, you know, rare occasion. But in the event it did, there's sort of an inconsistency to me to have a private approval, but a whole public discussion leading up to a determination, because that strikes me as sort of contradictory.
I don't think you would have a public discussion in the private censure. What we are proposing here would be a private censure authority for the board chair, so there wouldn't be a public discussion.
So in that, so I guess that's where I was a little unclear based on the prior discussion. So in that scenario, there isn't a board determination
No.
that precedes the chair's ability to make that call on a case-by-case basis.
Correct.
I may have misunderstood that. All right.
And again, this is a proposal for the board's consideration. If you have questions or you're uneasy with making any changes to Section 11, that's fine as well. It's really just the first time for us, for the board, to kind of think about these things. And again, it hasn't come up at all for many years, to my knowledge. So it's not anything urgent, but it's something to think about.
Well, based on that clarification, I mean, it makes sense to me. And as I say, it hasn't happened in the time I've been around. So I think it would be a rarity in any event. But I think the process that's described here is a good one.
Okay.
Any other thoughts or comments from board members on this?
Just to, not to nitpick this thing, but I found on page 5...
On the red line?
You look at either one, because okay. it carries forward to the finished version. Item 9 shall be, there's a subject-verb disagreement here, so communications, even if they disagrees, there shouldn't be with an S there.
Yes, thank you.
So I don't know if there's other instances in which that change appears, but we might want to do a little search and destroy.
Yes,
we'll
thank
look
you.
At that. And I had a question, if I could, but maybe I should wait till the end of the conversation, but whether or not there's a style guide of sorts that has been set up. As we go through these organizations and we get the language all nicely woked up, do we have a method by which each time we review one of these, make sure that the same items are carried through in those documents too? The checklist to make sure that if we're concerned about he, she, that it becomes they in every document. So is there a process to make sure that there is a checklist of items to make sure that these things are carried through? I prefer to see some consistency from document to document.
Yes.
So the chair is not used here and chairperson is used there.
Yeah.
Okay.
We do, and we like consistency as well. So we match this up. Some of the changes here to, you know, from chair to chairperson, that mirrors the regulations.
Yeah.
So we want consistency.
Because we got a ton of documents out there.
Correct. Yeah.
The binder, as I recall, is about yay thick. Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. Thank you. I'm sorry. I'm not, that one just jumped out at me. There may be some other typos, but I, probably not, but I just saw that one.
Thank you.
Okay. No, it's a good question, because I think what's probably going to come down the road, not too much further down the road, is probably an update or a refresh to the board regulations. I know that Christina and I have had that discussion on some of the matters that pertain to administration of meetings, and there's probably myriad things in the regulations that need to be updated, both for terminology and just things that are no longer relevant or need to be updated. So I think
some
it's timely.
Some are probably as a result of codes, but some are internal consistencies.
I'd like to have. Okay. Thanks.
All right. Any other comments or questions on the proposed changes to the Code of Fiduciary Conduct and Ethics? None? Seeing none? Is there a motion on this item?
Move to accept the changes, proposed changes. Second.
All right. It's been moved and seconded to accept the proposed changes to amend the Code of Fiduciary Conduct and Ethics. Any further questions or discussion on the item? Hearing none, let's vote on the motion. Anderson?
Aye.
Chabadarev?
Aye.
Gordon? Aye. Holcomb?
Aye.
Kroll?
Aye.
MacDonald?
Aye.
Zhu?
Aye.
Phillips?
Aye.
And Wong?
Aye.
All right, that motion carries 9-0. Thank you, and thanks for all the effort on that, Karen and Christian. I think that is a good step forward.